each week a single speaker is chosen from many for their service to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And now, Valley Group World Headquarters is proud to announce the winner of the Outstanding Speaker of the Week. The nominee for this category has a sobriety date of 12-2-2010. She has been in continual service to the Fellowship as a secretary, CSR, official driver, and sponsor. Her AA motto is, "Don't leave before the miracle happens." Now may I have the envelope, please? The winner of the Outstanding Speaker of the Week is Sandy H.
How can anybody remember what they're going to say after that? Good evening, everyone. My name is Sandy, and I am an alcoholic. If this podium goes off the stage, it's because I'm very nervous. Wow. I'm going to start by saying I am very nervous up here. I cannot promise you I will speak until the time is up. I'd like to welcome anybody that's new, congratulate everyone that got a chip, and congratulate Stephanie and for getting an 8-year chip. Congratulations. I'm going to share a little bit about step one, all the insanity and powerlessness and unmanageability in my life. And unfortunately, at this time, that's what I have the most to speak on. But, you know, everyone already knows, I came in this program in 86, and I thought that that was it for me, you know, done forever, with and without a solemn oath. And I meant that from the bottom of my heart. And I got into a lot of service work, and I started working in recovery. And the thing that I did not get was a higher power to help run my life. And it was all on self-will and as Sandy sees it. And needless to say, my life was very chaotic. I did not live the spiritual principles of this program. Every decision I made was right in here. And, you know, I don't know how I got in the business of working in recovery. I don't. It's really funny, but I was really good at telling you what to do, but I wasn't very good at following it. So, you know, I grew up, and I say I grew up in a little town called Cutler, and that is because, you know, my mom moved us from town to town and this and that, but I always got to go there every summer and every Christmas with my grandparents and stay on the ranch that he had. And when my mom finally, we were you know, very out of control children, go figure, and she kicked us out, and we went to my dad's, and I got to live on that ranch from then on. You know, I'm not sure what age I started drinking. I can tell you what age I was on purpose started drinking. And that was You know, I started really early, and it's not because I probably would have, but I got two older sisters who were also have the same issues I do. So I followed them, and because we moved around a lot, I stuck to their coattails most of my life, and I kind of lived off of their fame. But at 12 years old, I was already drinking, and my dad didn't care if we drank at home as long as we drank at home. So I did a lot of drinking at home and a lot of drinking not at home. But I would. By the time I was in junior high, I was getting drunk every day before school, and I only, you know, they have all these names for all these different cliques in junior high and high school. I hung out with those stoners, and we hung out in the field and you know, smoked cigarettes and drank and smoked those, you know, left-handed cigarettes and took handfuls of pills before school. And I don't know how I made it through school. I was always a teacher's pet. I know you can't tell by looking at me, but I require a lot of attention. But I was always a teacher's pet, and I always got really good grades, and I just really did good in school. In fact, I did so good, I got graduated a year early and got a little scholarship to go to COS and stuff like that. So school was never my problem. I wanted to go to school. I did not want to be at home. Home was really chaotic. A lot of craziness at home. I'm not going to really go into all that because I don't think it matters what happened at home. I would have ended up right here whether I had the sweet church going home or not, because I love what alcohol did to me. I went to school, went to COS, and I was had this great career I was going to get, but I couldn't stay sober. And the more I couldn't stay sober, the less I went to class. And I had these two crazy roommates, and one shot the other, and, you know, and that was kind of fun, and had to go to court over that. But I ended up going back to my first boyfriend that I had, and you know, I my roommate got shot, everything was going crazy, I was flunking out of school, and I call him and I say, "Hey, let's get married." And he goes, "All right." I'm like, solve my problems. And so we got married, and you know, I did not make a good wife. I did everything possible to that one could do to destroy a marriage, and I did it rather quickly. The marriage went down really quick, and I was with him for years and years before we got married. So, but I don't think he really realized how bad I was. And I kind of went off into some, you know, by this time I am drinking a lot. I'm ending up in places I don't want to be, and just craziness. And, you know, sometimes I wouldn't go home, and I, you know, we didn't have cell phones in, and I'd be all the way home calling, stopping at phone booths. I was at so-and-so's house, and then I'd call so-and-so, tell him I was at your house. And anyway, the marriage, needless to say, ended rather quickly, and during this time, I had a son. And I started at that time, and, you know, I was so out of control with alcohol, you know, and I know a lot of alcoholics, they just really love to be not, they love the alcohol filling and nothing to take it away. Well, that's not my story. And I got into some other things, and I really went downhill, and I spent all of her rent money on other things, and I said, okay, you take my son, and he went to live with his mom, and I said, and when I get my act together, I'll come back and I'll get him. And I did not go back and get him. I went from house to house, craziness to crazy, and my life just got more crazy and more crazy. And how I never ended up in jail is a godsend, because I am so scared to go to jail. That's like my biggest fear out there, drinking, was to go to jail. And that was never my issues or story. But anyway, by this time, I didn't want to live the way I was living anymore. And because I got into some other things, and I got into a very abusive relationship, I hit my bottom rather quickly. Well, it took 6 years, but to me, that was quickly. And when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I had so much guilt and shame. I told everybody that my ex-husband took my son from me. I couldn't even say the words that I walked away. And I started going and getting them. I don't know how many months it took. You know, when I was out there, every once in a while I'd go pick them up. And, you know, I was so skinny and black eyes and this and that. And he didn't even recognize me one time when I went to go get him. And he was crying, and I'm shoving him in the car, and he didn't want to go with me. And I didn't care. You know, it was like, you know, all I thought about was myself and my own needs. And I knew at that time I was not a good parent. And I knew that where I had left him was way better off than what I could have ever given him due to the choices that I made. I think he was 1 month shy of 8 years old when I got into recovery. And, you know, periodically I kind of put him through a lot of insanity when I could go get him. His dad finally said, if you can't go, come get him yourself, don't come get him. And it was a long time before I seen him again. But anyway, I remember, like, the first weekend. Oh, it took him like months before he'd call me and say, are you sure you're coming? Are you sure you're coming? Yes, I'm going to be there. I'll be there. And it took a long time. And, you know, that just tells you a very small portion of the damage that I did. And I remember we were sitting on the porch, and I was, you know, full of jealousy of his stepmother and all this stuff that I had created myself. And I had already learned some tools in the program, you know, that, you know, my troubles are my own making, you know. And he sat there on the steps in this apartment I was living in, and he puts his arm around me at 8 years old, and he tells me, Mom, I think you're doing a really good job. And, you know, I thought that would be, you know, that was like one of the things I held on to stay sober. And I stayed sober for 6 years. And I drank again. I still had no God in my life. And I got 3 years, and I'm talking a lot of insanity during all of this time. I drank again. And then I got a year and a half, I drank again. And at that time, I also switched to some other things, different things, things I never thought I would do. And I could not get another show of breath for 10 years. 9 or 10 years. I'm not sure how long it was. And I was lying to everybody about it, and everybody would, like, you know, could see that I was like this dark cloud of gloom and doom. I was suicidal all the time. You know, I like to think that the hanging out in the program kept me alive long enough to finally get sober one day, because I should have died in a million times. And my powerlessness was, I many, many times I wanted to come back into AA and I wanted to get this. And I would say, never again. I'm not, you know, I'd go through a detox, I'd end up in the hospital, and I'd say, never again, never again. Gosh, please, God, to help me stay sober. And I would go off on my own, you know, and sometimes I didn't even make it home from the hospital, and sometimes I'd make it a day, you know, and I almost, you know, I had this one surgery, and I told them everything I was taking, but I didn't tell them how much. I don't want to think I was bad. So, you know, I trimmed it down a little. And, you know, I had to wait a while before they took me into surgery. I'm thinking, well, screw this. And I started popping a bunch of pills. And I went into surgery, and when it came out, I couldn't come out of the anesthesia very well. I was sick and sick and sick, I was so sick, my eyes were swollen. They finally just, you know, said, do you want to just go home and see if you feel better? And I'm like, yeah, because I got some more stuff to do. And, yeah, 2 days later, or I don't know if it was the day after, or 2 days later, I had a heart attack, and twice in one day. And you would think that I was in so much denial. I was like, it was the surgery. Good God, everyone's overreacting. You know, my friends are like, are you finally done? And I'm like, done what? Get off my case. But, and in the very end, I'm going to get to the end of this because I still have a lot I'd like to say about recovery. In the end of all this, I had this dark hole in my stomach. I was very lonely, very suicidal. I would sit in my room for months, not days, months, and just stare at the wall. The only really person I had left in my life was my two kids and my grandkids, and in the end, that wasn't the case. My oldest son told me, go away and don't come back until you get into recovery, because I don't want to watch you die. This was after a couple of little interventions that did not take effect, and that was enough to make me think a little bit about what was going on. I was, at this time, you know, the powerlessness of my life. What kind of mother leaves her child? What kind of mother begs their child to get them more pills or to give them alcohol or to take care of them through a detox? You know, I don't know, a very spiritually sick individual, I must say. You know, and with all the shame and guilt I had, I came in the program, and I'm like, how is God going to, you know, how am I ever going to get God in my life? You know, it seems I have not been able to so far. And I got a sponsor, and a girl sponsor. That was different for me. Got a girl sponsor. And I started trusting a little bit, and we started going over the steps. And, you know, the first time we met, in the recovery home I went in, I read my first step, the powerless, all the things I've mentioned, plus a whole lot more, and my powerlessness. And she got me in the fourth step right away. We did the third step. We did, you know, I started writing stuff, and, you know, I had been in this before long enough to know everything I put down I was going to have to look at myself. myself. I'm like, oh, forget it. So I just wrote everything. I just went ahead and put my stuff at the end of it, because I already knew what I was going to have to do, you know, and what I found in that inventory was I had done a lot of damage to a lot of people. I already knew at that point that it was not your fault. I already knew at that point that I had a lot of amends to make and a life to build here in Alcoholics Anonymous. I went home and I read the sixth and the seventh. I did the seventh step prayer. And I started making a list of my amends, you know, and a lot of it came off of my four step. I was the type of person, so selfish, that so many people tried to help me in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I would not get honest. I would not tell the truth. And I walked over every single buddy that was the most important to me, who tried to help me. And I hope, you know, to God, I never have to do that again. I hope I never have to make a new list. I have made some amends. I'm not going to lie to you. I have not been able to make all of my amends, but I am willing to make the amends if possible. And the biggest amends for me was my family, my sister that I crapped all over time and time and time and time again. I totally destroyed that relationship. We're barely building that back up. I'm making an amends with my kids by just staying sober one day at a time. And there's many more, many more, and we don't have enough time for my mental list. But, you know, and step 11 has become the step that that I've become quite fond of, because I know standing here that without God in my life, I would not be standing here. I could not do it. I came to the same place I always came to the times I tried to get sober before. And without God in my life, I could not continue this, because there's been some painful stuff to go through. And, you know, I do love the saying, don't leave before the miracle happens. You guys told me that it's going to get better. You guys told me, hold my head up. You guys told me, you know, just stick around. It's going to get better. And it has gotten so much better. It took me about a year and a half to realize how much better it's gotten. I didn't realize most of the better has been as I'm sober. I haven't destroyed any lives since I've been here. In fact, I was thinking today that only one day out of my all the time I've been here, I've made one huge mistake that I will always regret. And that's it. That's pretty dang good. I am learning to pray when I wake up, ask God to guide me. I'm learning to, I've always prayed when I go to sleep, but I'm just now starting to pray when I wake up and just ask, which way do I go? And at night I think about, you know, did I hurt anybody and all that stuff. And, you know, in the big book it talks about everything. It gives you clear-cut directions on how to do it. And now, you know, I am going to cut it short, but I do want to spend some time talking about the fellowship, because everybody knows that's my most favorite part of this program is the fellowship. And I just want to thank all my friends who have held me up who have stayed stuck by me, who, you know, there's times, there was a couple of times when it was just like unbearable to not numb myself, and there was like three different times, I think, since I've been here, and Abraham would come up to me, and just at the right time, I don't even know why, he'd come up to me and he'd say, "We're going on a 12-step call," and I'm thinking, "Dude, I'm busy here, I'm thinking." And you're bugging me. And I'd go on the 12-step, and one 12-step that I went on with them saved me, because that person had 1 month ahead of me, and when I went on that 12-step, I was thinking, you know, forget this. This is too hard. When I went on that 12-step, I realized it's not that hard, and I got really grateful, you know. I don't only hang out with men today. I have my BFF, Pam, back there, who we spend almost every single day together. And we get to talk about girl stuff. And I'll tell you, if you knew me when I was out there, you would know why I did not trust women, because I would take anything you had and I wouldn't give it a second thought. And let me tell you, karma's a bitch. And I'm waiting for it to get over. But another blessing I've gotten since I've been here is my oldest son came in the program, and I want to thank the men of Alcoholics Anonymous for surrounding him and helping him get through this journey also. It's would have never told me I'd be standing in the same room with both of us in the room recovering. And, I couldn't, he's going to have a year next month. You know, what a deal this is. What a deal. I do a lot of stuff in this program. I go to conventions. I go to a lot of meetings. I interact with a lot of meetings. Holden meets with me every Monday now to go over, they like to say, page for page, line for line of the big book, and we're doing this workbook, and I'm so excited about it that because I'm learning stuff that I didn't know. How many people when you were out there would take the time to do the things that we do for each other? Not just for me. We all do it for each other. People helped me when I was very undeserving when I got here. People helped me when I got out of the recovery home that I could have never done on my own. They took a huge chance on me. And because my track record is not that good. And, you know, the other day I went to my granddaughter's birthday, and I love my grandchildren. I've always loved my grandchildren. They're a little rowdy, and when I was out there drinking, I was on my last nerve. And I'd be around them for like 5 minutes, and I would be a mess. And I went to the party, and they're blowing these horns. And when I get there, I was having a hot flash, I think. And I sat down, and then I go, and the second to the oldest one sat next to me. She goes, "Don't worry, Grandma Sandy, I'm here now." And I thought, Oh, how sweet. You know, and the little one who hardly would give me the time of day, I have four grandkids, and the littlest one who hardly give me the time of day tells me, bye, Grandma Sandy, five times before I even leave. And anyway, there was commotion everywhere. They're blowing their horns, and I was perfectly okay with being there. And you know, this has been a great thing. I don't plan on messing it up this time. And anyway, I'm 15 minutes early, and I think that's okay. I will not be taking questions. But I'll tell you what, I will be standing approximately right here after the meeting, and you can ask me anything you want, almost. But anyway, thank you for showing up, and like I said, if you're new, get with people, get phone numbers, get in the program, and it will save your life. Thank you.